Hello and welcome to the April episode of The Investor's Guide to China. I'm Catherine Young, Investment Director at Fidelity International.
And I'm Marty Dropkin, Head of Equities Asia Pacific.
For the longest time, the story of China's economy and stock market has been one of rapid growth. But as policymakers pivot to focus on the quality instead of the velocity of growth, investors are turning their attention to something more long-lasting, shareholder returns.
And what we mean by that is dividends and buybacks, which are moving up the agenda of regulators and companies. In China, generating interest for investors across the market, even in sectors of the so-called old economy.
In this episode, we're going to be exploring what's changed in the mindset of Chinese management, which industries are most prepared to ramp up payouts for their shareholders, and to what extent is this driven by the regulators.
And we'll also be asking, is the push for shareholder return in China any different from what we've seen in other Asian markets like Japan and Korea? What lessons can we apply from those countries, and what role can investors play in the process?
Now, Marty, just to give our audience a sense of how important this topic is, before coming into the studio, I looked up the stats on shareholder returns in China. In the onshore market, so that's the A-share market in China, the payout ratio, that's dividends as a proportion of earnings, went from 29% in 2012 to almost 38% a decade later.
It's a staggering increase, isn't it? It's also very timely. Earlier this month, China announced a lot of policies on capital markets. Regulators are encouraging all listed companies to pay dividends more frequently and sustainably, and they're turning up the heat on those who haven't paid dividends in many years. So, Catherine, let me introduce our first guest now, Linda Zhou. She's a Shanghai-based portfolio manager. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Marty.
Linda, let's kick off in terms of the shareholder return. Is the notion the same in China as what we see in other markets?
I think in a very long period of time, the shareholder return in China means more on price return. China is basically in a high growth period for quite some time, and investors, especially the retail investors, are very accustomed to the price returns rather than traditional shareholder returns like dividend or buybacks. But I will say the overall progress is relatively slow until very recently, given the government is pushing high shareholder returns in the forms of dividend as well as buyback. And also people started to realize the beauty of dividend return in the past 3 years of down market. So it's getting changed slowly.
There's also been a change from a regulatory perspective with the CSRC, so the China Securities Regulatory Commission. Can you please elaborate on those regulations?
So like Marty mentioned, recently we had a lot of new regulations. I think the most important one is the one to promote a more healthy security markets. So among that, the most important changes is to encourage buybacks as well as the dividend payout. And also it increased the punishment of companies who didn't pay dividends for consecutive years. So from this measurement, you can see that clearly the government wants a more sustainable shareholder return format. So I think it will be a very good move for the overall attitude change towards more dividend-based shareholder return.
Linda, so we talked a little bit about regulation, and there's a distinction between SOEs or state-owned enterprises and private companies in China. How important are policymakers as part of this story?
There is a quite big differences towards shareholder returns between SOEs and POE. For SOEs, it will be very common for them to sit on a relatively lazy balance sheet, which means that they will have more cash sit on the balance sheet. Capital allocation is pretty lazy in the sense that they don't really think too much of the ROE, because for a very long period of time, the KPIs for the SOEs is always size, you know, the size in revenue, the size in market share, size in profits. But in the past 2 to 3 years, things all started to change. For example, I think 2 years ago, they started to change the KPIs of SOEs. They put KPIs like ROEs, cash flows, as well as more recently market cap into the KPIs. So that's also changed the overall mentality of the SOE companies.
And for international investors, for investors outside of China, what should they be thinking about in terms of the shareholder returns just as you've discussed? Is there any difference in the way they would look at it than, say, the way domestic investors would look at shareholder returns?
Yeah, I think the international shareholders also, you know, they invest in China mainly for growth. That's why, you know, the way people look at total return is a bit different from the traditional markets. So usually if we look at total returns, we will combine both dividend yield paybacks as well as your price appreciation together. But I feel like most of the international investors in China, they're probably also quite similar to the local investors, put higher priority of price appreciation. That probably will also start to change, especially, you know, if you realize that the dividend yield will be higher than the price appreciation.
One area of the market which tends to be overlooked for the opportunities is the utility sector. And I spoke to Bunny Huan, who's our Shanghai-based utilities analyst, just about the change in sentiment the sector is receiving, given this renewed focus, or new focus, I should say, when it comes to shareholder returns. Hi, Bunny. Utilities are all around us, especially somewhere like Shanghai. So how important is the Shanghainese business district when it comes to being a consumer of utilities?
Actually, I'm just standing outside where our Fidelity office is located in Shanghai. Office buildings like this, shopping malls, as well as hotels, in total consume 80% of total electricity in the city. So a very big number.
That's a very big number indeed. I guess when you look at utilities, we've seen a big change in the sector's life cycle. Can you run us through this, please?
In general, a company can experience four stages, from introduction to growth to mature and to a decline stage. Actually, in the past few years, we have seen a very strong paradigm shift from growth to mature. For example, like city gas companies, historically, they can see at least 10% earnings growth or even 20 to 30% growth in good years. However, in recent years, companies can see only like 10% growth or even below. So a lot of companies like this are shifting from the growth stage to a mature stage, and that growth rate deceleration could be sea change.
So what does that mean for investors, given this change we're seeing?
For investors, the very meaningful change is historically, the companies always ask money from investors, meaning they are a lot of seasonal offering, and we need to put money inside to grow these companies greater. However, in recent years, because they have already been in a mature stage, so these companies are very willing to give back to their shareholders and improve the shareholder returns. So we have seen a lot of buybacks, a lot of dividends from these companies as well.
A lot of these utility companies, though, are state-owned. So would you argue that the focus on shareholder returns has really been driven by government policy?
I think that is a very significant driver because, as you know, a lot of SOE companies, their main shareholder is the government. So under current economic situations, the local government also have a strong incentive to improve their return as shareholders, either by better share price performances or higher share buyback or dividend pay to the shareholders. So I think in the recent 2 years, there are a lot of regulations released to improve the shareholder returns. And I see that as a structural change also in the coming few years.
So could you argue, therefore, Bunny, that these utility companies are almost becoming somewhat of a benchmark in terms of shareholder return improvements?
Yeah, definitely, because utilities companies are generally companies with high earnings visibilities, so their dividend yield can generally be the benchmark for all the companies in this market. For A-share, actually, people generally use Yangtze Power. They offer 4% for 1 year dividend yield. And for H-share ones, people generally look at Hong Kong utilities like CKI and Power Asset. They now offer 6% for 1 year dividend yield. And these two are generally the benchmark for A-share and H-shares.
Bunny, great talking to you. Thanks so much for sharing your insights.
Thanks for having me.
I think what Bunny just talked about, and it links back to what Linda was bringing to life earlier, is this sort of dynamic around value and growth styles within China. And I imagine we'll talk more about that as the podcast goes on. But this is such an interesting thing to focus on, right? Because Linda said it, historically, particularly international investors came to China for growth. But now, with higher payouts, they might be looking more towards yield and shareholder returns, which are more value characteristics.
Marty, also what's fascinating is just how broad this trend's becoming. So whether you look at the A-share market, so the onshore market, versus, let's say, the H-share market, which are Hong Kong-listed stocks. So a really interesting dynamic that we're seeing. And in fact, one of our other portfolio managers, who I'd like to bring into the conversation, Dale Nichols, has really been focusing on this. So Dale, you've been investing across the Asia-Pacific region for 20 years plus. In particular, you've got a very strong focus on Chinese equities. So can you recall how Chinese companies used to think about shareholder returns when you, let's say, very first started, and how things have since changed?
Yeah, it's been a pretty big shift over time. I remember the early days, companies are very focused on growth. It was really a land grab across a range of sectors. And so they're very aggressive. And it was just, you know, that's where the capital was going, into growth. Now, obviously, growth has slowed. I think there's been consolidation across a number of sectors. So we sort of understand the way the sectors are forming in terms of market structure. And as a result, the CapEx opportunities aren't there like they were in the past. So companies are building up more cash. A lot of them have steady businesses. So it's natural for more of that to come back to shareholders. At the same time, obviously, you know, share prices, particularly over the past few years, are much weaker. That's a problem for companies. They need to motivate their staff. So they're focused on getting share prices up, but they also realize the underlying value of their stock. So there's a natural incentive for them to be buying their stock. And then, of course, you have the government influence as well. It's, you know, can't be understated, particularly for the SOEs, as Linda mentioned. So that's a factor. But yeah, it's definitely changed significantly. I've got a bunch of companies in the portfolio that are generating double-digit returns if you think about dividends and buybacks together. That was definitely not the case a few years ago. So we're putting pressure on the companies to give back more. If the markets aren't going to pay us, we want the companies to pay us. And we're definitely applying that pressure.
And these companies aren't just in traditional income-generating sectors like utilities, are they?
No. I mean, I think the sector that stands out is the big tech sector, the big internet companies. They're the ones that are really doing a lot now in terms of buybacks. It's really significant. You've seen a bunch of companies that have gone from being net issuers of stock to actually reducing their total stock count. And that's just happened in the last couple of years. So that's actually a sector that really stands out in terms of capital return.
So Linda, we've talked about the reform in state-owned companies, but what about the privately owned companies? How are they thinking about shareholder return?
Yeah, that's an also very interesting point. Because for POEs, again, they take the company as their own assets. For a quite long period of time, usually they will regard the equity market as a funding source, which they probably don't need to pay it back in a very long period of time. And in the old days, because they continue to have very strong growth, people are willing to give them high valuations. Most of the return expectations is mainly from the price appreciations. But gradually, their growth slowed down. That's why their valuation multiple compressed a lot. And they started to realize that at this point of time, if they can increase their dividend payout a little bit, they probably can have some offset of the valuation decline. And secondly, also for the POE companies, they also do buyback, but usually they don't cancel the shares. That's also related with the capital market regulations because it's an approval-based IPOs or equity raising. So usually it would be very difficult for them to increase their capital base again. But the recent regulation changes also encourage them to be more think of the shareholder returns rather than just to think of their capital base. So the regulators give more punishment on those zero dividend payout POEs. So overall, I think both the shareholders' expectations as well as the regulations kind of encouraging direction makes the POE also started to change.
And Dale, just picking up on Linda's commentary there and picking up on that 20 plus year experience that you have in the markets, what is the balance as you see between dividends and buybacks? And do you see in your history as an investor, or maybe in your approach to portfolio management, do you have a preference for one or the other?
I hate to say this, but it kind of depends. You know, so in some markets, there's tax implications for paying dividends versus buybacks. I think a big factor is also the stock price. So how undervalued is the company? But at the same time, dividends are really important. It's an important message because I think the market generally assumes they're more sustainable. So it's a strong message to the market about management's view of the sustainability of cash flows when you set a dividend. Obviously, the assumption is that, you know, it grows over time. At least it's stable. I think it really depends on the situation that we're looking at.
And Dale, some people might accuse you of being a bit of a value investor yourself. I guess with thinking about everything that we've just discussed of this sort of shift from growth to value, You know, what is your view? Have things evolved in a way that's sort of more interesting for your style, or how do you see the market continuing to progress?
Yeah, you know, I always struggle with this distinction oftentimes because, you know, I'm really focused on just buying companies that are trading at discounts to intrinsic value. And across the portfolio, there'll be growth companies in there. There'll be companies that are growing fast. There'll be companies, you know, not growing as fast, but still trading at significant discounts to intrinsic value. But obviously, we've talked about valuations now. Most of the companies in the market, a large proportion of the companies in the market, are trading at significant discounts to what they were in the past. And I think a lot of the companies that we potentially viewed as growth companies now could fall into that value category, just given the sort of cash flows that they're generating. And Marty, you'll know that's sort of attracting a different style of investor as well. So the traditional names, like the names that I talked about in the tech sector, the type of investor that's being attracted to those names is probably changing as well, just given their approach to capital return.
Linda, when we look at value in China, though, what are the factors? And is it just equities we should be thinking about? What about fixed income?
I think the asset allocation between equity and fixed income also plays a quite important role here, because the fixed income market in the past 2 years, it's rallied a lot, a very big, strong bull market, which makes the yield also compress quite a lot. For example, we have the 30 years treasury yield, it's below 2.5%. And from the conversation with clients directly, you can feel their anxiety searching for yield products, because their wealth management products, you know, used to be a very common cash stalling products, used to be 4 to 5% easily, and now you can only get less than 2%. So if you can get a stable income products, or maybe, you know, in dividend stocks, like give you 4 to 5% dividend yield stably, I think it would be very welcomed.
To help us put China in the regional context, I caught up with Jochen Brohr, one of our portfolio managers based in Singapore, who focuses on equity income. And here's what he had to say. Hi, Jochen. So let's talk dividends. How important are dividends to total return in Asian equities?
Looking at Asia, the picture is quite similar to global indices in that around 50% of the total return over time has come from dividends. But then if we look within Asia, there are, on the one hand, some of the more developed markets such as Australia, Taiwan, Singapore, where payout ratios are relatively high and hence a higher percentage of the total return over time has come from dividends. But on the other hand, we have more emerging markets such as India and Philippines, where payout ratios are lower, around 30%, and hence the total return has been more driven by earnings growth over time.
Okay, so some disparity across markets. Is some of that driven by regulation, or these countries just the different stages in development?
A lot is down to stages of development, but there are two countries in Asia where I think there's somewhat outliers, Korea and China. If we go into Korea first, the government late last year came out with a value up program, which incentivizes companies to improve shareholder returns. Now we had the elections, there might be some delays to this program, but I think the travel up direction is very clear. And then if we look at China, the government has been encouraging companies, particularly the state-owned enterprises, to improve shareholder returns. They introduced ROE, return on equity, as an additional measure, KPI for the management teams. And hence, we have seen improvements in shareholder returns. If we look, for example, at the A-share market, which doesn't only include state-owned enterprises, but also the private sector, payout ratios have increased from around 30% to 40% over the last 5 years.
And this all, of course, follows what we've seen in Japan over the last couple of years with a much stronger focus on shareholder returns. Let's kind of expand the geographic focus. Jochen, you work with our colleagues in London quite a bit on the income team. You know, how do views differ across Asia and what you might see in Europe and the US?
In Europe and the US, capital management frameworks are more developed than in Asia, and often the management teams are more incentivized by good capital allocation. But in Asia, we're seeing those improvements coming through. I mentioned Korea and China, where the governments or regulators have been behind those changes. You mentioned Japan as well. But we're seeing it also in the private sector. For example, I engaged with a large real estate company here in the region, and they have materially improved their shareholder returns over the last few years by improving, A, their dividend policy, but also through buybacks, which have been recurring over the last few years.
We are, of course, a very fundamentally driven organization looking at individual companies that build up into overall portfolios. As an income manager, what do you really look for from a management team and what ticks the box for you?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is dividend policies and buybacks, capital allocation is just one aspect that we look for in companies that we invest in. But then when it comes to dividend policies, I think the most important thing is that dividends are sustainable. So we're looking for companies with strong balance sheets, good cash generation, where those cash flows support the dividend streams, and also managements that are incentivized by good capital allocation, where their KPIs, their ownership in the company reflects or aligns with minority shareholders.
So sustainable policies and sustainable cash flow makes a lot of sense. Thank you very much, Jochen.
Thanks, Marty.
What Jochen mentioned about the sustainability of dividend payouts is really, really key for investors, because you can't have excitement during one reporting season and then disappointment because the dividend policy or range of buybacks is significantly less the next. So Jochen also mentioned this issue around KPIs. And a new trend we're seeing in China is the trend towards what we call restricted stock units, so RSUs. Dale, could I just please get your view in terms of what exactly are RSUs?
Yeah, these are just effectively awards of stock to employees. That's basically what it comes down to. Whereas an option, it's just that. It's an option to buy stock. And, you know, there's debate about what sort of the right strike price for options are. But, you know, I think we're going through a period now where RSUs are favored, and probably sort of weakness in markets in China is probably a factor there. Employees know they've got at least some value, whereas obviously with options, there's a potential that they're worthless. There's really intense debate about what is right. And I think it sort of, again, probably depends on the company and what's right for the employees. From our perspective as investors, what's really important is that this is really seen as a cost of the business. So oftentimes you'll see management that think about the cost of issuing stock differently from other costs, but it really is a cost that needs to be factored in. And that's something that we really sort of encourage management to think about when effectively diluting the stakes of other shareholders in the company.
Linda, with the companies and the management teams you're speaking to on the ground in the A-share market, again, what is your view on RSUs?
In the A-share space, the restricted shares is also very common. But as Dale mentioned, it's actually a cost to minority shareholders. So usually they need to have a threshold. So there will be requirements for them to be able to unlock these restricted shares. And for these requirements, usually they set on the ROE target, earnings growth target. At least you need to have the earnings growth higher than your dilution. So restricted shares is very common. It still links with the shareholders' interest to the key management and then the key persons in the company. But we need to be very careful to calculate on the net impact, whether it's accretive or dilutive.
Dale, you spend a lot of time looking at Japan. You even speak Japanese. I guess talk about whether there are any similarities in the way you look at things between what we've just talked about in China around shareholder returns and what you're seeing in Japan.
When you look at sort of that progression in Japan over time, clearly government policy was important. You had the governance code, you had the stewardship code come in, and then obviously the TSE setting specific goals for companies. So I think that was definitely important. You see similarities. The markets, as mentioned, Korea and China now as well. So I think, you know, in terms of differences, probably, I don't know, as someone who's spent a lot of time looking at Japanese companies, the general laziness of balance sheets was probably more extreme in Japan. So that created potentially more potential in terms of upside around capital return. But, you know, there are many companies in China as well that similarly have a lot of cash on their balance sheet. And again, as I sort of mentioned earlier, not having the capex needs that they did in the past. So there's real potential for a lot of companies to be paying out a lot more.
And so it is it's a broader regional theme. You just talked about Korea. We've got the value up strategy, which has come up quite a bit recently. Do you see similarities there as well?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, Korea is a market where, you know, the starting point for payout ratios is even lower. So there's huge potential upside. There are tax issues, et cetera, that need to be overcome. There's questions around the motivation of the big shebel to sort of get behind this from a tax perspective. But there's real potential here. You know, I should say, I mean, what has happened in Japan hasn't gone unnoticed in these markets. Clearly, the regulators in these other markets are seeing, you know, what that change that's happened. And I think that's part of what's shaping the way they're developing policy as well.
Dale, if we look at the other end of the spectrum, so we have Korea, which is one of the lowest dividend yield paying markets in the region. And at the other end is Australia, which for 100 or 150 plus years, they've been the highest dividend paying market in the world. How much of this has got to do with the pension system in Australia and how robust it is, as well as some of the tax benefits? And could we see a similar event roll out in China over the long term?
Yeah, I think you make a good point. It's definitely a factor. You know how the superannuation system, you know, works in Australia. You know, there's a consistent flow into the pension market directly out of people's incomes. We're seeing similar moves, not exactly the same, but the creation of ISA accounts. So you've seen that in Japan. They continue to grow. Similar moves that you're seeing in Korea. Sort of long-term pensions is something that the government is increasingly focused on in China. So I'm hopeful that, you know, we'll see sort of more policy moves along those lines in China as well, but still very early days, to be honest.
I guess maybe for the Australian market, a high payout ratio also relates to some of the sector structuring. I guess probably will be more energy-related sectors in Australia, which you have pretty limited CapEx in the past few years, and you know your payout naturally will be higher. So that's quite similar actually in the Chinese market as well, especially in the past, I think, 5 to 8 years after we got all this control or supply side reform for the upstream sectors, like the oil, coal, as well as some of the minings, aluminium. So these are very clear. It's more like a government pushed the supply side reform. And then you can see that CapEx just dropped tremendously. And then, you know, with more and more cash piling on the balance sheet, naturally, you know, the payout will be higher. So I think on that perspective, the upstream related sectors will continue to have higher payout, and that hopefully will also help the overall payout in the Chinese equity market increase.
So Linda, you've mentioned various sectors, but what exactly are the metrics you look for when investing for dividends in China?
I think Johan had a very good summary of that. We're focusing on the earnings sustainability. So, you know, a fundamental forecast is always quite important. And then your strong balance sheet, usually I prefer net cash companies with very strong cash flows. So these are all provide you strong evidence or strong requirements for them to continue to pay out dividend. Another thing I think slightly different from Johan is I will also focusing on their CapEx plan as well as the potential of payout increase. So because of we are in quite different macro period, growth is naturally declining. So on the capital allocation, there could be more allocate to dividend rather than CapEx. So that will need a one-on-one meeting with companies. But I do see that's happening, especially on the POE side. For the SOE side, I pay very close attention with SOE who are sitting on a very big net cash position with relatively low ROE. So this will be low-hanging fruit. If they really got their incentive corrected, they will easily can increase their payout.
I think Linda's making a really good point about that distinction between paying out to shareholders versus CapEx. And I think it's important that we're not telling companies you must pay out at all costs. You know, if companies have great projects, if they have high return investments, I think our attitude is go for it. If you can generate those returns. The question is when you don't have those returns, you've got cash building up on your balance sheet, your stock is cheap. In that situation, that's when we're looking for more of that capital to be coming back to us as shareholders.
You know, Catherine, it's been a really interesting conversation. And what we've talked about is the evolution of the Chinese market from growth stage to much more of a shareholder return stage, not just in China. Clearly, there's a dynamic across the whole region. And something that Linda said really struck me was, you know, this sort of search for yield. And we know we've been talking about income as a theme for global investors for quite a period of time now. And it's really interesting when you look at the China market in a declining rate environment and the search for income there and how that compares to what offshore investors will look at where, candidly, you know, time deposits are giving you 4 to 5% right now. And so you can kind of pick up that natural income. It almost kind of feeds into why investors are sort of searching for a little bit more in shareholder returns and dividends within China, right, in this low rate environment.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting, or I find fascinating, that back in 2017, we started looking at the income component of China. And people just used to look at me very strangely and go, but no, China's all about growth, even though it's been more pronounced more recently. But it has been something that's been on the radar for years. And just like we can't forget that also with Japan and the regulatory changes there, it's been about a decade. It wasn't something that just happened last year. So it's not just a growth story. And as you highlighted, Marty, it's also about the value component or the shareholder return aspect. That brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you to our guests, Linda Shou and Dale Nichols, and to our other contributors, Bunny Huan and Jochen Brohe.
And thank you for listening. If you want to read more of what's been covered today, please go to your local Fidelity website or fidelityinternational.com.
The producers were Rory Fong and Noah Sin, with production support from Tommy Su, Keith Chun, Kim Juko, Judy Chen, and Seb Morton Clark.
Until next time, from all of us at Fidelity, goodbye.
Goodbye.
This podcast is for investment professionals only and should not be relied on by private investors. This podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is intended only for the person or entities to which it is sent. It must not be reproduced or circulated to any other party without prior permission of Fidelity. The value of investments can go down as well as up, so you may get back less than you invest. For other important legal notices, please visit your local Fidelity website.